Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, marking 47 years of commitment to operating the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
When you shop for household items or business supplies, do you consider how long the products will last and whether or not they can be recycled or reused in the future? What does it cost environmentally when things are tossed into a landfill, and how much recycling is happening in Alaska currently? Some Alaskans are creating new ways to reuse discarded materials. We'll hear from them today on Talk of Alaska.
Hi, I'm Avery Elfelt, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media, KHNS, where I work in Haines, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news on Alaska News Nightly or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello! From Alaska Public Media, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Does your community provide recycling options, or do you live in a region where the landfill is the only option for broken or discarded items? Have you found ways to repurpose things that would otherwise be thrown away? When you buy a new computer or smartphone, do you know where or if you can recycle your old one? What materials offer the best opportunity for reuse, refurbishing, or creating completely new products? Our guests today have figured out the answer to at least some of these questions. Patrick Simpson is the owner of Alaska Plastic Recovery and is in the studio with me today. Arlie Hitchcock is the outreach manager for Green Star of Interior Alaska and joins us from Fairbanks. And Nicole Baker is the executive director and founder of Net Your Problem. Welcome, all of you. Thanks so much for being with us today. Waste, especially plastic waste, is clearly a big problem. The Alaska Beacon reports an estimated 75 to 125 million pounds of plastic waste wash up just on Alaska beaches each year. And more than 1 million of those styrofoam-lined boxes for shipping fish are used each year. Yikes. So let's start with an overview from each of you about what you're creating from trash, and then we'll dig into how you got started and if you have expansion plans. Patrick, your business, Alaska Plastic Recovery, makes a product called Grizzly Lumber. Tell us why you started this work and how you figured out how to make plastic lumber from plastic waste.
Well, thank you for inviting me today. Recycling is, I think it's a topic that we all need to be paying attention to. It's grizzly wood.
Grizzly wood.
But it's still sticky, which is, we want to sell a product that people remember. No one's going to remember Alaska Plastic Recovery. I started Alaska Plastic Recovery actually to focus on plastic ocean waste. So I was looking at ways in which I could take plastic waste and convert it into some useful product. And Nicole, who has been doing this long, long before me, has been very successful in finding ways to take fishing gear. And so I'll let her, of course, tell you about that. But I follow in her large footsteps. So I'm so glad that she's a part of this program and I get a chance to share my story with her story. So Alaska Plastic Recovery started by looking at that. And then once we looked at the amount, the volume that we could get from marine debris cleanup exercises, we realized there wasn't enough. So I started looking for other sources. And we then started collecting post-consumer plastics. And there's a variety of places we picked it up. We had a collection at one time in Seward. We had another one in Soldotna. Those were both very successful. And then we brought our equipment, which is mobile, down to those locations and converted it into grizzly wood on site. Our largest collection effort right now is in Anchorage. So we are teamed with the municipality of Anchorage. And starting on May 1st, we'll be collecting plastics. This will be our third year in a row. And we'll do it through the 31st of October. In the past, we've done it Thursday, Friday, Saturday from 8:30 till 3:30. I don't know. We haven't finished all of the planning for this year, if that's going to still be the same. But then we've added to the plastic ocean waste, this post-consumer plastic. And then there's a third stream that's been really good for us, and that is there's plastics that are put on pipe that go to the North Slope, well pipe. And the thread protectors on those pipes, when they're done with them on the North Slope, come back to us from a couple of the oil companies. And that's been, it's a real high quality plastic. So that's been the core plastics. And then we convert that into dimensional lumber, 2x4s, 2x6s, 3x4s, 4x4s. And then even further downstream, make it into picnic tables and park benches.
Just an amazing and very cool project, and a fantastic way to reuse plastic that would otherwise end up in landfills. And as we know, there's more and more information coming out about microplastics in land, in the soil, and in water, and in the air, and in us. And so these efforts are not just nice to haves, they're really necessary for our collective future and the health of us and our environment. Thanks for getting us started, Patrick. And I will remember, it's Grizzly Wood. We'll need to check in with you around the 1st of May to find out more about the collection efforts and how that's going. But Nicole, I want to turn to you. Describe Net Your Problems mission. I love the name, by the way, in cleaning up and reusing marine debris.
Yeah, so I would say our efforts are focused on end-of-life maritime plastics. And so we distinguish end of life being something that I'm a fisherman or a vessel operator, and I need to dispose of this net because it's stretched out, or they changed the regulations, or for safety reasons, I'm only allowed to use this 12 times. So that material then needs to be disposed of and goes to us as a way of keeping it out of the landfill. So we do mechanical recycling, which is similar to Patrick's efforts, where stuff can be shredded up, melted, and turned into plastic beads that can then be remanufactured into new plastic products. But we'd also do other non-landfill disposal things, like turning it back into oil through the process of pyrolysis, or it can be shredded and turned into a concrete aggregate, or it can be incinerated to generate electricity. So there's all kinds of ways of keeping those materials sort of in the supply chain. And that's what our efforts focus on.
And I want to back up a bit there. You said incinerated. How does that work, where it's not, when I think of burning plastics that my hair wants to stand on end, thinking, yikes, that sounds really toxic.
Yeah, you're thinking of somebody burning something in their backyard in a 55-gallon metal drum, probably.
Yes.
Which that is not what I'm talking about. So there are these industrial facilities, and actually the municipality of Anchorage is seriously considering one of these, where it's heated at very high temperatures. The exhaust is scrubbed of the pollutants, and the steam that is generated from the incineration process runs a turbine that generates electricity for other industrial purposes. So if we've sent some to this facility in Washington State previously, where it powers a plant that is making concrete. So then that concrete plant doesn't have to purchase diesel, which is a petroleum product that is not a renewable resource. So they are saving that environmental cost, I guess, and are able to power their plant using waste instead.
Mm, outstanding. That sounds fantastic. Thank you for clarifying how that process works and that it's not sending more toxins into the environment. Nicole, I want to stick with you for just a moment. You previously worked as a marine biologist and fisheries observer. How did that lead to your current work recycling nets and lines? I think that you, if I remember correctly, you worked in Unalaska, Dutch Harbor, for quite a bit and noted that there was piles of nets everywhere that can't go into the landfill.
Yeah, that's exactly how the story started with Net Your Problem. I was an observer from 2010 until 2015. So I collected data on commercial fishing vessels in Dutch Harbor and Kodiak and Accutane. And it was my first time in Alaska. I grew up in Buffalo, New York originally, and was in these communities and just noticed that there were piles of nets everywhere. And anyone who has been there or in a commercial fishing town will be very familiar with this scene. And a lot of times what happens is the materials just get piled up because nobody really knows what to do with them. In Dutch Harbor specifically, you cannot take old trawl nets to the city's landfill. So people were paying to have them in storage because they didn't really have another option of what to do. And landfills around Alaska vary in what they will and won't take and what the fees or not fees are. But it worked out pretty good for me to start in on Alaska with this operation because the vessels were already used to paying to store things. So when we then started this business, which has now become a nonprofit, to collect these materials, the resistance was not that great in the beginning. As we expanded to the other communities in Alaska, I learned that everything was not the same as it was in Dutch Harbor, which we could talk about that later. But that was the sort of the crucible for the start of Net Your Problem, because it just introduced me to the fact that this even was an issue.
And the fact that vessel owners or companies were having to pay to store what is essentially non-usable material for themselves, what a tremendous, you know, just a cost that has no benefit to them on right down the road. I'm sure they were happy to have another alternative. Arlie, turning to you now, Green Star has recycled electronics for decades. Before we talk about that, tell us about taking over recycling for the Fairbanks Borough. Green Star took that on about 3 years ago, 2023. How did that come about, and what are you able to take from borough residents?
Mm-hmm. So the Central Recycling Facility opened in 2017. A nonprofit called The Mission was running it, and in 2022, they decided that they didn't want to operate it anymore. And Green Star, we had been putting in bids for years to operate it, and so we got our chance to do that and have been operating it since 2022. In 2023, we opened our Reuse It store, which is our refurbished electronics store we could talk about later. Currently, we accept steel cans, which are also known as tin cans because they have a tin lining a lot of the time. Number one and number two, plastic bottles and jugs, aluminum cans, cardboard, office paper, mixed paper, batteries, and electronics.
All right. And Green Star started recycling before the borough pickup in 2023, started the recycling program in the 1990s. Talk about how that first originated.
Yeah, that came about because in the 90s, folks were starting to realize that computers, TVs, all the electronic devices of the 20th century had a lot of heavy metals in them and harmful chemicals that were going into our landfill. And as Nicole's talking about, there's a lot of unlined landfills. Fairbanks has a lined landfill right now, but we have a long history of unlined landfills. And our landfill is right next to the Tanana River. So if there's a liner that gets ripped or compromised in some way, then those heavy minerals are going into that water table of the Tanana River and going into the Tanana. So folks in the 90s started putting on electronic collection depots, would meet in parking lots, bring their electronics that they are done with together, and then pool money together to ship them off to the lower 48 to get recycled. And then that's began expanding over time into a nonprofit and to us now operating the central recycling facility for the borough, having our refurbished electronics store, and a whole variety of programs.
All right, if you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska. And today we're talking about recycling in Alaska, what the options are in different communities, and also visiting with some Alaskans who have found great ways of recycling and making new products out of other people's cast-offs, and especially from plastic materials. In the studio with me is Patrick Simpson. Patrick is the owner of Alaska Plastic Recovery, which makes grizzly wood from plastic. Arlie Hitchcock is on the line from Fairbanks. Arlie is the outreach manager for Green Star of Interior Alaska. And Nicole Baker is the founder and executive director of Net Your Problem. Nicole, are you in Homer right now?
I am, yeah.
Okay, all right. All right, Patrick, I wanted to get back to you. What kind of plastics can you use to make grizzly lumber? What are the different consumer products especially?
Yeah, the Green Star mentioned, Arlie mentioned that they take ones and twos in bottles, basically anything with a lid. We've expanded that. So we'll take ones, twos, and fives, and we'll take any of them unless they held something toxic or petro or oil-based.
Oh.
So I don't mean olive oil. I mean like if it was a jug that held 10W-40 motor oil, we won't take that. And if it, and we sometimes have people come by with 55-gallon drums that used to hold some pretty nasty things, and we can't take those. So, and that's because our process still requires us to grind it and then melt it. And if there's any residual materials left behind, that could be difficult. So we take ones, twos, and fives. So in ones, which is the PET, polyethylene terephthalate, we take anything. So if it's a clamshell, if it's a bottle, we'll take it, which is nice because our collection efforts here in Anchorage, there's another collection effort going on. And they'll just take the bottles because that's what they can use. That's what they can repurpose and send out. Same thing in the Valley, except I think in the Valley, Tam Bovey's the executive director of Valley Community Recycling, VCRS. It's hard to figure out what that is. So I call it Valley Recycling. But anyway, they'll take number fives in the Valley as well. So yeah, we've widened that up, and then we will grind that together in different components and then add that to a base, which is the thread protectors from the North Slope. And we can pretty much use anything you bring us.
You know, early this morning, I was rinsing out a jug that I was a little bit amused by the fact that here's a plastic jug that had organic juice in it. But I could not find a number on this plastic container. I rinsed it out, put it in my recycling box, but I thought, I hope this is okay, because I could not find a number on that bottle.
That's common. So the rule of thumb, the rough rule of thumb, is if it's a clear plastic, it's probably a one. If it's an opaque plastic, but it's firm, it's a two or a five. If it's a plastic that is a film, it's likely a four. We are unable to process the fours right now.
No Saran wrap or any of that.
Yeah,
sort of
plastic
thing.
Bags, yeah. Shopping bags, okay. And there's a tremendous amount of plastic that's used in freight. So if you look at anything, and for example, go to Costco and look up on the racks, every one of those pallets is wrapped in plastic.
So much plastic.
And I talked to a gentleman that was with Cars Safeway, and he said they generate around 2,000 pounds with their stores a week.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, and that's all being landfilled. So, but I would have to add an additional step to our process that would allow us to process the number four. So we take all the ones, all the twos, all the fives, and if you use that rough rule of thumb, but we don't ask you to sort them. So just bring them into us. We do ask you to rinse them out and make sure they're clean.
I was going to ask about that, the importance of rinsing. Do you need people to take labels off also?
No.
Oh, okay.
No,
so just rinse them.
Rinse them. Now, number fives include things like pill bottles. And so oftentimes you may want to take a black marker and just mark out any,
information
you don't want to share.
Of course.
Yeah. But you don't have to go through that meticulous process of pulling it off.
So I have a email question from Veronica, or it might just be more of a statement. Veronica says, every time I recycle my plastics, I see the wrong stuff in the recycling containers. I'm talking about the big dumpsters for one and two plastic bottles. Again and again, I see comments on Facebook from people who say you can recycle any one or two. She says this is not correct. Please impress upon the listeners to follow the instructions on the containers. Only put the items described on the signs. Other items are contaminants. I often see people saying, I saw them dumping the recycling containers at the landfill. They don't recycle. She says, if the container is full of contaminants, it will have to go to the landfill because it's too expensive to pay for someone to take out the garbage.
That's an excellent comment. And we had unmonitored collection sites in at other locations. And you do get a real mixed bag. You'll get a lot of non-plastic items that, you know, someone is, you know, apparently thought it was a trash can, or they thought, dear, you know, plastic and glass were the same thing. So we'll get, you know, a case of wine bottles or, you know, aluminum cans. So that does take a lot of effort. So what we have done at our Anchorage collection location, where we get the bulk of our post-consumers, we have someone there. And as they come up, we go through that with them. They will then make sure that the plastic that's come in is clean and it's the appropriate type. And then we don't have to go through that additional step of sorting after the fact.
Outstanding. All right, let's go to the phones for a moment. Judy is in Palmer. Judy is still in Palmer, but not on the phone. All right. Nicole, getting back to you, did you get guidance from other marine debris recovery groups when you started Net Your Problem? And talk about what you're able to use and what you're making from this marine debris.
Yeah, so we have similar, you know, things of what we can and can't take. We work with a majority of all of the maritime industries, so trawl, gill net, lines from pot fisheries and seines we can all recycle. The line used in pot fishery is number 5 polypropylene, so that's a similar type of plastic. That's what's used to make yogurt chars or sour cream tubs. And then we also take trawl gear or the chafe gear from a seine, which is number 2. That's high density polyethylene. And then we also take gill nets and seines, which in the chasing arrows thing that we've been talking about with the numbers, that's a number 7. I want to take this moment to clarify that symbol, the triangle with the arrows around it with the number, that doesn't actually mean that something is recyclable. So I think what we're learning here is that each, you know, jurisdiction, town, city, village, borough has different rules about what is acceptable and what is not based on where they are then sending that material to be processed. So putting something in your bin, kind of hoping that it gets recycled, that's a phenomenon known as wish cycling. And that can be really detrimental, as the person who emailed in mentioned, which is that it just contaminates a load and then it doesn't end up getting recycled. So, you know, what we tell fishermen is, if you want to recycle with us, this is what you need to do. You need to take your net apart. You need to sort it. You need to put your sink line here and your float line here. You need to take your chafe gear off. And this is all very, you know, fishing industry terminology, but the stuff needs to be deconstructed so that what you end up with is a singular type of material that is then valuable to someone else. And Pat mentioned VCRS. So I attended a presentation in Haines many years ago with the former executive director, and she basically explained it like, if you go to the store and you want to buy a 5-pound bag of sugar, and you buy it and you get it home and you open it and half of it is sawdust and half of it is sugar, you'd be annoyed because that's not what you thought that you were buying. So similarly, when all of us who collect materials for recycling ultimately sell that or send that to the company that is going to process it, they don't want to receive it and learn that half of it is not what they're able to recycle. So this whole sorting conversation is really important. And if you're not into it, that's fine. You have a trash can. So if you don't want to participate in the recycling and put in the work that is needed in order to do that, there are other disposal options available to you, and you should use those instead of putting stuff that doesn't belong in a certain recycling bin, because that ruins it for everyone else.
Yeah, excellent point. Important to understand how you can participate, important to participate, but yes, if you aren't able to for some reason, then don't contaminate the rest of it. Let's go back to the phones. Judy is back on the line from Palmer. Hello, Judy.
Hello.
Did you have a question?
Oh, yes, I do. I met Patrick at Grizzly Wood, and I love his picnic tables. So I was wondering if he's still making those. But now I don't get to give him my number fives because he's not in Palmer. So and that makes me really sad. But I just heard him say that our recycling takes five, but, you know, in Palmer. But I keep asking, and they don't. So I'd like to know about that. Or if he's ever got a collection bin there, I know that would be impossible, but is there any way I can give him my number fives? I just hate to throw them away.
Well, do you come into Anchorage occasionally?
No, never, no.
I could talk to VCRS and see if that might be possible for us to pull the fives out. The thing we're very careful about, is it Judy?
Yes.
Judy, the thing we're very careful about is we don't want to start a program and not know that we can continue it for multiple years. So we're really hesitant to do a false start. We would hopefully be able to do something where there would be a collection location in the valley in the future. So it's just we're moving through growing pains, and our location in Palmer, the owner of the location has decided he wants to do something other than storing plastic on his lots. So he's asked us to move our operation. So we're in the midst of doing that now. Yeah.
I'm really sorry because everyone used to give me their fives because I was the hero. I would bring them over there. Now I'm not a hero anymore.
It's one of the most amazing things to me. We were doing some initial collection in Anchorage, and we had one gentleman come up, and he had literally 3 years worth of yoga containers.
Wow.
Cleaned, stacked neatly, and I think it was like a stack, you know, 3 stacks, 8 foot tall. He ate a lot of yogurt. But
clearly,
it was fantastic, you know, and of course they were ideal for us, clean, ready to go, same type of plastic.
Fantastic.
It was wonderful.
Good on you, sir, that you did the right work. And you know, Judy, it sounds kind of like maybe folks in Palmer need to get together and decide, hey, once Grizzly Wood, Alaska Plastic Recovery is taking plastics again in Anchorage, maybe there's a shuttle service that folks could start in the valley and come in once a week or once a month or something and bring those number fives in so they can be collected here in Anchorage. We are going to take a break. Thanks so much for the call, Judy. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion about how to recycle in Alaska and some of the unique ways that Alaskans are creating to repurpose plastics as Talk of Alaska continues. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're talking about recycling in our state today with Patrick Simpson. Patrick is the owner of Alaska Plastic Recovery that makes Grizzly Wood. And that wood gets turned into picnic tables and boardwalks and all kinds of cool things. Arlie Hitchcock is the outreach manager for Green Star of Interior Alaska, and Arlie is in Fairbanks. Nicole Baker is the founder and executive director of Net Your Problem, and Nicole is in Homer, although Net Your Problem is does work far beyond Alaska, and we'll learn more about that in a minute. So I wanted to ask all of you for what are some simple things you suggest to individuals to help reduce their non-recyclable waste. As an example, I have friends that go to restaurants that they have worked out agreements where these restaurants allow them, when they call for carryout, they bring their own containers rather than getting, you know, especially styrofoam. So they've worked with local restaurants to say, hey, I'm coming in to get carryout, I'll bring my own containers. What ideas do you have? Patrick, start us off here for how people can just be thoughtful about what are you consuming?
I think I spend a lot of time, my spare time in the gym, and I also am the executive director of a nonprofit that raises money for the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation called the Lost Lake Run. So I'm around a lot of athletes, and athletes carry these water bottles. And so I think one of the smarter things we can do is reusable water bottles.
Yes.
Yeah, either metal or something that you can clean and not buy these plastic bottles over and over and over again. Or if I'm on a trip and I don't have the right size or something, I'll buy a bottle, but I'll reuse it over and over and over again so that I'm getting multiple uses out of that. I think that just that even that simple piece makes that so much better.
Yeah, I know that just like using bags, freezer bags. I will wash those and reuse them over and over because I don't like to use plastic bags. Mm-hmm. But if I am going to use them, I'm going to make sure that we use them several times before they have to be tossed out. Arlie and Nicole, your thoughts about how people can be more thoughtful about what they buy. Arlie, you want to start?
I think buying things in bulk, and we need that more at our grocery stores as well, and using your own containers is a really good place to start. Sharing with your neighbors as well.
And Nicole,
yeah, and I'll
your
just
thoughts.
Add, yeah, and I'll just add, kind of think about if you even need to buy something. So mm-hmm. I have this habit where I say, like, oh, I really want something, and I write it on a list, and then I don't go and buy it right away, because then 2 weeks later, when I look at my list and I'm like, oh, I didn't really need that, or oh, I found an alternative for that. So I think just generally speaking, being more thoughtful about if you even need to buy something in the first place would go a long way to reducing waste. And then if you are going to buy something, since we're talking about recycling, you know, look at your options. And if there is one where the product is made out of recycled plastic, that is what drives the whole economic engine of recycling. So it doesn't make sense for Patrick to collect stuff if he can't sell the lumber. It doesn't make sense for me to collect nets if nobody's going to buy the plastic or the electronics, if nobody's going to, you know, buy recycled gold or whatever comes out of computers. So the whole idea of recycling is that there is a valuable raw material produced at the end that is useful in manufacturing new products. So if people like the idea of recycling, you have to also buy products then that are made with recycled materials, because that is what drives the whole thing. So I'm just about being a very intentional consumer in whether I need this, and then if I do need it, does it have some sort of recycled materials in the product?
Excellent advice. Thank you so much. Do any of you know of folks who are, I know that clothing is such a huge issue, clothing that gets thrown away, and there's a lot of microplastics in clothing. I have always had a wardrobe for radio, so I wear my clothes forever and not worried about fashion at all. So I wonder if there are any efforts underway beyond thrift stores are awesome. And when I do decide to get rid of some clothing, I always take it to one of the thrift stores to donate it. But are there efforts underway to address some of that that you're aware of? Anyone have thoughts about that?
I do. Yeah. In Fairbanks, there's some local efforts going on. There's a clothing co-op that is starting, a Golden Heart Thrift. They're actually coming down to Anchorage, I think, next weekend for a convention. They're collecting clothing. Outside of my job, I have a block printing business where I take clothing from our transfer sites, because a lot of people like to put clothing at our reuse area of transfer sites, or clothing from my friends, and I give it a new life with different stamped prints on it. But clothing is a big problem, and there's also a lot of microplastics in clothing. So eventually your water bottle will get recycled enough where it becomes a polyester jacket or something of that type. So it is important to keep that out of our landfills. And folks can also do clothing exchanges as well. But thrift stores do end up often, if they don't have a backhaul program, which most Alaskan big thrift stores do not have a backhaul program, then a lot of those clothing that doesn't get sold ends up in the landfill. So trying to redistribute it amongst your friends or giving it to different shelters is a good place to start before the thrift store.
Yeah, have a clothing exchange party with your friends. My mom, decades and decades ago, had her own business at home, and she at in her office, she had what she called the chair boutique, where she had a big chair and people could bring in clothing that they were ready to part with and put it on the chair. And then other people could come in and take things or leave other things. So she was doing that many, many years ago. Let's go to the phones again for a moment. Ken is in Fairbanks. Hello, Ken.
Hi, getting you off the speakerphone here. Just wanted to give a shout out to the Green Star Electronics program in Fairbanks. I've gotten several computers from there. The folks are fabulous. If you need a computer of any sort, particularly in the Windows area, go there first, man. The deals are phenomenal. You buy a much better computer than you can possibly get any place except online. And the guys there are real geeks who really put together something that will get the job done for you.
Ken, I'm so cheap. Thank you so much for kind of queuing that up for us, because I did want to ask Arlie about Green Star's efforts to refurbish cell phones and laptops. Do you have limits on how much and from where you can collect electronics? I have three old laptops and a couple of old cell phones that are sitting on a shelf. Can people send these to you? Do you want them? Do you want things to be prepped a certain way? Should people make sure information is deleted? Does that matter?
Well, thank you, Ken, for bringing that up. One point of clarification is we do not refurbish cell phones and tablets, and that's because of right to repair laws are still in progress in this state to allow that to happen. We collect electronics from the central recycling facility. So if you're coming up to Fairbanks, you can bring them there. It's free for borough residents. You're not supposed to use it if you're not a borough resident, but no one is checking for that. And folks don't need to wipe their drive because we do not reuse any memory containing devices. So we don't reuse those drives. That's what we do buy new is the data containing parts of the computers that we are using. So you don't have to do any sort of prep, but bring them to the central recycling facility and then they get weighed and the borough pays for us to recycle them. They go to our electronics warehouse and our team of staff and volunteers go through them, figure out what can be refurbished and resold and what needs to be disassembled for the different components to get recycled. And we have refurbished over 40,000 pounds of electronics since we opened in 2023. So that's 40,000 pounds of electronics kept out of our landfill and kept in circulation in Fairbanks.
And keeping those toxic materials out of the land and the water, too. That's outstanding. You also refurbish eyeglasses. I know as an oldster, I have several pair. I'm always looking for them everywhere. Tell us about that program.
So the Aurora Borealis Lions Club does the refurbishing of eyeglasses. The central recycling facility is a collection point for them. So you can bring in your eyeglasses with your regular recycling. And then we make sure that the Lions Club gets it down in North Pole. And they have special days where they go through and they check the prescription of all those eyeglasses and they sort them and then they send them off to people that need those eyeglasses.
That's great.
It's a really awesome program. They do thousands of eyeglasses a year.
That's fantastic. We're going to go back to the phones in a second here, but there is a question from Antonia about Grizzly Wood. Antonia asks, is there a problem of releasing microplastics or other toxic materials when grizzly wood is cut?
Yes, you should contain it, and because it's just like sawdust, so it's plastic dust. So you are creating microplastics. So what we do is we put a tarp down on the ground It's pretty heavy, so it's not as light and fluffy as sawdust. So it will it'll accumulate pretty quickly wherever you're cutting, and then just scoop it up. And then what we do is we just run it right back into the extruder. So it's already ground and in a great shape. So we immediately reuse it, but you do want to contain it.
Yeah,
because it is definitely, you're creating a microplastic right there.
Excellent question. Thank you for that. Let's go to the phones. Melissa is in Haines. Hello, Melissa.
Hello. Hi, Patrick. I'm the chair of Haines Friends of Recycling, and we're in the process of finishing up purchasing a new recycling center. Part of the reason that we're doing that is so that we can expand and make Grizzly Wood here in Southeast Alaska. So Patrick was here in 2024, I think, and did a demonstration project for us. And we also collect fish nets. So hello, Nicole. I'll forward that to you from Molly.
Hi, Melissa.
Hi. And Nicole, you were here for our Earth Day event at one point and talked about the fishnet recycling. So anyway, this is a great program. Thank you so much for putting this on. There is some pending legislation you should know about. It's SB 61, I think, that works on corporate responsibility for closing the loop on recycling, particularly related to electronic recycling.
Melissa, I'm so glad you called in and thrilled to know that you're undertaking an effort to make Grizzly Wood and also to get involved in the net recycling. That is outstanding for Southeast Alaska. Thank you so much for the call. We're going to take another quick break and we'll get back to more calls and more email questions as Talk of Alaska continues.
Hi, I'm Avery Elfelt, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media, KHNS, where I work in Haines, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news on Alaska News Nightly or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
Let's go back to the phones. Richard is in Craig. Hello.
Hello.
Did you have a question?
Well, I have a question regarding freight. I've been promoting recycling and down here on Prince of Wales Island, mostly aluminum I've been specializing in, and but also steel. And the freight companies have been really generous with bringing back my container at no charge and ship and just charging one way. But I think that if we could somehow or another give the freight companies a little tax break for hauling recyclables, we would be able to get the plastics and the aluminum and steel and back to Seattle or to the market more efficiently, and that would make the difference between having a profitable container going south versus costing me money to recycle aluminum. I also would point out that aluminum cans, crushed and drained and well drained, have a certain price, but aluminum foil is pretty much garbage in the wide, wide world. I got a couple other questions. Some I'd like to give, I think, Patrick there at Grizzly Lumber, attaboy for putting together the lumber idea. I understand the other one that I wanted to throw out here is that just about every community in Alaska has a community burn pit. And I've always wondered, and I'm really curious about this, the turbine, the burning the plastics to generate steam and then making electricity with a turbine. This is a fairly small size turbine, I'm going to guess, and that's something that just about any community could conceivably be making electricity with, burning cardboard and pallets and building supplies from people's remodeling and whatnot. So if there's a way to mix the burning of the plastics with burning of wood to generate electricity in communities, seems like it'd be something that we all ought to be looking into, trying to figure out how to do. Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Richard. Several excellent points there. It seems like if there's a way to scrub out toxins from plastic, there could certainly be a way of scrubbing out particulate and toxins from wood and cardboard to generate electricity.
Both are fairly porous, so they absorb materials, and it does make it a little more challenging.
Oh, okay.
So I don't, because plastics, you're taking it off the surface, but it doesn't absorb anything.
Interesting.
It doesn't absorb water, chemicals, and things like that. So cardboards and woods are highly absorbent, and so anything you put on it that's nasty is going to stay
there.
In it.
Yeah.
I would, Mark Stafford is with the Municipality of Anchorage, and he's got a very comprehensive program for waste to energy. And so I'd urge the fellow from Craig to track some of the stuff. But I think he's in the process of actually identifying the right location for, and Nicole mentioned this as well, a waste to energy plant. So that's going to be coming.
And Richard also mentioned something that I wanted to ask about. I was out at Target one day and saw that they had a recycling bin. And so I asked at customer service, I said, what's up with that? How come you're taking recycling here? And the customer service person said, well, we take small consumer amounts because we have a barge that goes back empty to Seattle. And so we just put on, you know, some recycling to haul back. And it got me thinking along the same lines as Richard, is there a way to coordinate more of that? Because we, as we know, Alaska doesn't manufacture anything, so we're not sending barges loaded back.
It's being done. Alpar works with several of the all of the major freight companies, and they donate up to, I think it's 1,000 containers a year that they backhaul and take recyclable materials and other things out of the state. So it's being done, and Nita Nelson at Alpar would be a fantastic guest in this area, and she could tell you a lot about that program.
That is fantastic. Go ahead.
That's how Green Star also gets our recycling back too, is via those empty containers, and we get really good prices from the freight companies for that.
And Richard had mentioned about giving tax breaks to the shipping companies. And so I think that's sort of the idea when the shipping companies donate containers to nonprofits that are doing recycling activities, they get to write off the in-kind contribution that they're giving to a nonprofit, which is part of the reason why we transition from a business to be a nonprofit, is to be able to take advantage of the reduced freight rates, because otherwise it's just impossible. The value of the material that you're shipping is just not worth what you're paying. And just as an example, we do recycling in Bristol Bay. So we paid $8,500 for a container to send it from Bristol Bay to Seattle. And the value of the nets in there is not $8,500. So if you're trying to do recycling, that is absolutely the pinch point is paying for the freight. So any efforts, like Pat mentioned, the Alpar and doing backhaul is what you need in order for recycling to be successful.
We have a question from Aaron Ford, who is also in Homer. He says, I have a question for Patrick. I recall that you used to collect plastics to be recycled on the Kenai Peninsula. Local folks have been asking what happened if you're still operating. I wonder if you would mention some of the successes or issues you had working down here and why you moved to Anchorage.
So we had a collection location in Soldotna and another one in Seward. And then we've done collection down in Homer. And right now, I guess the key point is just it's expensive for us to move that plastic to a centralized location. And so we've had some initial conversations with the Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor's office, because at one point this year they had lost their baler. And so they were looking for ways in which they could deal with some of the materials that they usually bale. And so anyway, I think it's something that we're trying to find a nice mix for. And I think an ideal location would be something like Soldotna, because it's somewhat central to Homer and some of the and Seward. And so we could do it there. But it's going to take a little bit more thinking on our part for a location. And that's really what the stumbling block has been, is where do we put this? And as a for-profit company, it's difficult for us to put a location at a municipality.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if I could just add to this too, Pat, I think one of the collection spots in Homer was at the Center for Coastal Studies. So we baled up that plastic and brought it to Pat's place when it was in Palmer. But the reason that that is not there anymore, from what I understand from Henry, is that the contamination is too great. So they have the super sacks outside the office, and it says with all kinds of signs, ones, twos, fives, and people are just throwing stuff that's not ones, twos, or fives in there. And then it becomes the Center for Coastal Studies' job to sort the town's recycling, which is just not what the program is meant to do. So again, it just goes back to, if you want to do recycling, you have to follow the rules of what is going on in your local area. And if you don't want to sort it, then just throw it in the trash, because then it wrecks it for everyone else.
Let's go back to the phones for a moment. We're just about out of time here, but let's go to Don in Soldotna. Hi, Don.
Hi there, Lori. Thanks for taking my call. My question is actually really similar to the last one about working with the Kenai Peninsula Borough, because they are going through a transition of what they will recycle right now. And they don't do any plastic right now. They used to do ones and twos. So that was my question to the person that does the Grizzly Lumber, Grizzly Wood. And I hope they can figure out something to help, at least, even if it's just a seasonal thing. You know, maybe we can save our containers for 3 years and then bring them in. so that was my question.
All right.
And that is the area that we've been having discussions with the Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor's office, is where might we put that and what would that look like? So but it's very preliminary. So I think right now, Nicole was describing how she converted from a for-profit to a nonprofit, and I think that's something we're seriously thinking about as well, because providing access to collection points is becoming a problem, and coordinating that with an entity like a municipality, it's very difficult for them to do that with a for-profit. It's much easier with a nonprofit.
Sure. And Nicole, you are working not just in Alaska. You're working in other states. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we have... let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I wrote them down in case anybody asked. 7 places in Alaska where we're collecting, but also Washington, Oregon, California, and in New England. So any place where there's fishing or a lot of maritime activity happening, we expect that a lot of these materials are going to be getting discarded. And I think we're the only organization in the United States that is focused exclusively on this netting and line issue. And, you know, we've gotten inquiries from water parks in Connecticut and ski resorts in Montana. So I think there's a lot of opportunity to expand for doing these materials elsewhere in the U.S. too.
Fantastic. We have a comment by Robin in Anchorage saying, every time I go to the dump or transfer station, I see people tossing perfectly good items. One time I filled my trailer with items and ended up selling several pieces. We are tossing needlessly. Why doesn't Anchorage have a collection area where people can leave, take stuff? And of course, there are the secondhand stores. You can take things to several different places to take used items, and but I know that there are some landfill dump areas where they actually do have a set aside area where people can put things that are in good shape and others can come and take them. So that's one effort. Patrick, I know that you take plastic from companies and make products specifically for them. Tell us about that.
Specifically for companies, you mean?
You take items from them and then make things for them.
Oh, so, well, for example, they call it circularity. Hillcorp has provided us with thread protectors, and then we've converted that back into 6x8s, 8-foot 6x8s. I'm not entirely certain what they're using them for, but we've delivered several of those down to the Kenai Peninsula. I would mention Kelly Toth, who's the director now for Solid Waste Services, used to be the recycling czar. And so she's very recycling minded. And I think, you know, something like this idea of having a location where perfectly good items could be set aside, I think she'd be very amenable to at least to discussing that. So I think that would be a great conversation topic to bring up with her.
Absolutely. We have a question from Kathy who says, I tuned in late. Have you covered where we can drop off electronics for recycling in Anchorage? Arlie, is there an effort underway here in Anchorage for doing that you're aware of?
No, there's not that I'm aware of. There's a couple stores I can't think of off the top of my head that will sometimes buy electronics from folks. But I have heard people bringing them up to Fairbanks for that reason. We have consulted a little bit with Anchorage and showed them, and also folks on the Kenai to what we're doing in our process. But it's a whole big facility that they would have to seriously invest in for that. But I think they are interested in doing that to keep specifically, yeah, batteries and electronics out, because they can also both cause landfill fires as well.
We'll have to leave it there. Thanks so much to our guests today, Patrick Simpson, Arlie Hitchcock, and Nicole Baker. Our team is made up, comprised of Crystal Hyde, our engineer on the board. Our producer is Emily Messner. Our editor is Annie Feit. And on the phones, Ava White helped us out today. Thanks so much for listening, for your interest, for the calls and emails. I'm Lori Townsend. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.